Okay. It's a pleasure to be back with you here and to have a little time to talk this morning. I was told this was going to be quite informal, so I'd like to keep it that way. If there are questions as we go along, feel free to raise your hand and say something there. I hope it can be informative, hope it can be encouraging as far as the work that we're doing. I want to start out with reading a brief text from Acts chapter 14. I think most of us are familiar with the report that was given at the end of Paul's first journey. As he got back to Antioch from where he had been sent out to that work, it says in the last three verses of chapter 14, "From there they sailed to Antioch, where they had been commended to the grace of God for the work which they had completed. Now when they had come and gathered the church together, they reported all that God had done with them, and that he had opened the door of faith to the Gentiles. So they stayed there a long time with the disciples." Now, this isn't Antioch, and my work is not completed, and I'm not going to stay a long time. Don't get too worried about that. However, what I want us to focus on is to remember that what we're going to be looking at this morning is what God's been doing. He's allowed some of us to have a role in that. He's allowed some of us to be a part of that. But God is the one who gives the increase. God is the one who's doing the work. And ultimately, every result that we can see of efforts made in Brazil or wherever else come because of the power of His Word. It's that Word that created this world. It's that Word that sustains this world. And it is that world that transforms our hearts and the hearts of many other people. So we're going to keep the focus on what God has been doing. We'll talk about methods, we'll talk about specifics of things that have happened in different places, but it's going to be a focus on God's work and a small part of that in one part of the world. Several of the things I'm going to mention here at the beginning, I've mentioned in a presentation that some of you have participated in a couple of years ago, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I realize there's some people that maybe have not looked at it, so I'll go briefly through some points here. I'm putting several things on each slide just to be a little more efficient going through some of this. The Brazil has a population currently of just over 200 million people. That is in a land area that is larger than the 48 contiguous states of the United States. As you can tell, it's not the same kind of shape as the U.S. It's spread out more in the different directions there. That means that there's diversity of climate. The northern part of the country is actually in the northern hemisphere. Where we live is just outside the Tropic of Capricorn. The southern end of the country dips down several degrees below that. Culture, obviously, also is quite diverse. The southern part of the country has a greater Germanic influence. A lot of immigrants that went from Germany to Argentina and to the southern part of Brazil in the 20th century. The northern part has a larger African influence. It was a point of access to Africa for the slave trade that continued until 1888, as I recall. At least the abolition of slavery was not until 1888. The trade itself might have ended somewhat before that. That would be the northeastern area. The northern area itself has a greater indigenous influence because this is the area that you can think of the indigenous tribes in the Amazon area. It's also a very sparsely populated region, this section through here. And so there are different influences. Where we live in São Paulo, which is the largest city in the country, it is a huge metropolis with people from everywhere. It would be kind of like London is thought of in Europe, in South America. São Paulo is that city that has drawn people from every part of the world, has the largest populations outside of their own countries of two or three different ethnic groups. Arabs, for example, I think there may be a larger population, or Libyans maybe it is, in São Paulo than anywhere else outside their country, and just because of so many people there. The economy over the 21 years we've been in Brazil, in general, has improved. Brazil, through the 80s and 90s, was known for hyperinflation. They traded currencies approximately every year, a year and a half, because a currency was introduced where one bill was worth $1. After a year and a half, it would take maybe 20,000 of those bills to be worth $1, and they'd have to reprint a new currency and start all over. That changed with a policy that was introduced right after we got to Brazil, about 1994. We've actually got the same currency that's been in use since 1994. That's a modern record for Brazil. And although the country is still messed up and corrupt and the taxes are still outrageously high, people are better off today financially than they were 21 years ago. Primary religious influences in the country, Catholicism was considered to be about 90% of the population a little over 20 years ago. That number is probably below 70% now. There's been a significant exodus from the Catholic Church. Many of those people going into neo-Pentecostal groups. There's a lot of preaching of the health, the wealth, and or health and welfare gospel, I guess it is. So the prosperity message that so many are preaching in this country as well. I think I'm going to step down here a little lower and let make it easier to see, perhaps. But there are a lot of these television evangelists that are preaching the idea that if you give your tithe and you make your extra sacrifices to the church, you will be prosperous. Some of them even to the point of saying, when the return on your savings account is not very good, invest in the church, it gives a better financial return than you're going to get at the bank. As far as the work that we've been involved in the last 21 years, North American participation, I think, can be divided basically into two parts. On-site, those of us who have lived there, spent some time working there. My family, for 21 years. Others have been there for periods of 2, 3, 4 years. Carl Ballard has been there longer than those others as well. He's in his second time in Brazil. Helps that the first time he was there, he went single and married a Brazilian. So even though he came back to the States for a while, he and his family are now back in Brazil, apparently with intention to stay long term. And then those who have helped from a distance. I continue to receive support from the U.S., including from the congregation here. The other men who have gone down there have depended on American support. There's also been a lot of help in the efforts themselves. I'll talk a little bit more about Carl Henneke's contribution to that, but Carl has been involved in the work in Brazil basically every day for the last 19 or 20 years. And others who have contributed in more sporadic ways in that kind of thing. A few men who make trips down there, especially those who have lived there and learned Portuguese, and who make trips back down to help with the congregations throughout the country. And then Brazilian participation. Over these years, we've helped to establish almost 30 congregations that are scattered throughout the country. We work with those different groups, traveling to visit them, sending out material to try to help them. That means also a lot of Brazilian brethren involved in that. There are not very many preachers supported full-time in amongst these churches, so most of the congregations, the different men, divide up the responsibility of teaching and preaching and do the best that they can. And, of course, there are some men who are supported by Brazilian churches, Brazilian preachers supported by Brazilian churches that are involved in the work in different parts of the country as well. So that's kind of some of the general background. Before I go into more of the things about contacts, any questions about that general background information?
What continent's
on? South America.
Okay.
It's the Portuguese-speaking half of South America, basically.
Yes?
Yes.
You mentioned population from North Africa. How much influence is Islam?
Probably about the same as it is here. There are some there. There are mosques, and there are people that wear the traditional clothing and such. But it's not a super frequent thing. Not something where we see a major political influence from that. I would say that the Catholics and the evangelicals have a lot more political clout, and they try to exercise it pretty openly. Other questions about the background information? Okay, let me talk a little bit about some of the work with contacts. From what my brother communicated to me, we're going to kind of focus a little bit more on some things related to the use of the website, the internet, to be able to reach people. And so I want to give a little bit of background of what typically happens with the people that we come into contact with. And I'm referring to these as cold contacts. I think most of us are familiar with that distinction. When we're looking to find people that we don't know, when we're just trying to reach out and make contact with people. For example, in our early days in Brazil, before the internet came into play very much, and before the government established some different rules about what you could do on handing out material on the streets, there was one bridge in downtown São Paulo that different ones of us would sometimes go there with a stack of flyers to hand them out to people walking across this pedestrian bridge. That bridge, they said at the time, had foot traffic on average of 1 million people per day that crossed it. So I could hand out about 1,200 flyers an hour, put them in the hands of people as they walked across that bridge. That's working for cold contacts. These are efforts that we use for mass distribution of things to try to find one person out of maybe several hundred or 1,000 or more that will receive that. That did bring results. That brought people to Bible studies. There are a number of Christians who continue serving the Lord today whose first contact was a piece of paper on the street in São Paulo back in the early 90s. As the internet has come into play, it has become by far a bigger source of our contacts. And so what happens typically is that somebody is frustrated with the church that he's involved in. He realizes there are things that just don't seem to make sense. Or he's facing problems in his own life. Some sort of a spiritual crisis in his own life. And he starts looking for something. And at that point, he either receives a flyer, an article that somebody hands to him that maybe includes just about every piece of paper we put out, we put the address of our website on it. So if he gets that and it's helpful to him, he sees that website address, he may very well access our website. More than that, people do Google searches. They get online, they're looking for something about tithing because they keep hearing about how they have to give the tithe at the church they're in. And they get on there and they search that, and it brings them to our website. Once they get to that website, they start to study. Several of the recent contacts have commented to me that once they found the website, they clicked on a video and they watched the video. And then they realized there were other videos. And I've had people tell me they got home from work every single day during a solid week, went straight to the computer to start reading and watching videos and trying to see what was there of this material. Another fellow told me he stayed up all night, the first night he found it. Didn't sleep that night. He stayed up studying that entire night. So people get started many times studying through that. And that's one of the things that brings them to us already prepared to hear what they're going to hear when they come to some sort of a study. The next step of that is for them to make contact with us. Sorry, I'm hitting the wrong buttons here. For them to make contact with us. Because up to this point, we don't have any contact directly with them. We put material out there for them, but we don't know who they are. I'll show in a little bit where they might be from, but we don't know who they are. So they have to contact us in some way. That can be done by email or mail, or many times by participation in a public study. And I'll get to a little bit more about that in a couple of minutes. When these people make contact, many times they're already fairly far advanced in their study because of the quantity of material they've had access to. And so in some cases, that'll lead to conversions and to the beginning of new congregations, which is what has led to hundreds of conversions and dozens of congregations scattered around the country. So that's kind of a typical process of how people come to us. As far as the sources, primary sources of these contacts, warm contacts, I still believe in any place, are going to be our best ones. Those are the people that, after someone is converted, and usually this will happen during the first couple of years after conversion, he wants to talk to everybody he knows. He talks to his family members, he talks to his coworkers, his neighbors. He may not be prepared to teach them everything that they need to know, but he's zealous to try, and will oftentimes ask for the help of somebody more experienced to be able to teach those people. And so many times we see some of the best contacts there, just like you will see them here, through those warm contacts. But I didn't have any warm contacts when I moved to Brazil. I barely spoke the language. And so we did use a lot of printed material, continue to use a lot of printed material. And in recent years, we've also been able to start working with some newspaper articles. The fellow I said mentioned that stayed up all night watching videos the first time he found our website. He then got in contact with us by email. We started corresponding by email. I encouraged him to come to some studies in a city not too far from where he lived, 4 or 5 hours away. He came to those, he and his wife. They participated in an all-day study marathon, studied with us further that same night, and about midnight that night, the two of them were baptized. This fellow, his name's Lauro. Lauro runs an auto repair shop in the town he lives in. And he knows a lot of people because he fixes their cars, including an editor from the local newspaper. So not very long after he was converted, Lauro pitched an idea to the editor. He said, "Have you ever thought about a column in your newspaper? Maybe something like, 'What does the Bible say?' Just articles about what the Bible teaches." The editor liked the idea, so Lauro got in touch with me, asked me to send him some proposals for how it could be done, and he opened up for doing a column in that newspaper, the equivalent of a full sheet, single-spaced of typewritten, computer written these days, but anyway, the equivalent of one sheet. So it fills basically a column in this tabloid-sized newspaper. And that goes in there twice a week. That little newspaper doesn't have a real great number of readers, maybe 12,000 or so readers, but they're scattered out amongst about 40 little towns in the northern part of that state. People that we might not reach very easily through other means. We've now been doing that for almost 3 years. Article number 302 went in the paper this week. And they continue to give, we're not paying a dime for that, it's just the effort of sending the articles in every week. And that involves other Christians in a couple different places, proofreading articles, helping them to study as well. So that's been one of the ways. But the internet efforts have by far become the most effective ways of being able to reach people and to make contact with new people in Brazil. And that involves our basic website, which is kind of the core of all this we're going to look at. That includes videos that we put on YouTube. We have a page on YouTube, but that's mainly as a mechanism to be able to put them onto our website so they can be embedded on our website. I don't like using, in fact, I don't give out the YouTube address for that, because if people watch a video directly on YouTube, they'll get suggestions of a lot of other things. And a lot of times those are going to teach false doctrine. If they watch it embedded on our site, then what they're seeing around it are other things from our site. And that's where we want to keep them on the site. So YouTube is just the mechanism, the technology to be able to put that on our site. Facebook in a similar way. I don't much care for Facebook, but I do use it because it's a way of putting out, and normally about every day we'll put on something of an article that's being focused that day on the website. Carl will separate out an article each morning. There'll be the focus article and a focus video for the day. And then I'll go onto my Facebook profile where I've got contacts with hundreds of different people, and I'll put those on there. And some of those will share it with other people and get it spread out more that way. So that's pretty much the way we've been using Facebook with that. Okay, let's talk a little bit about website. That's, I guess, where we're going to expect maybe to focus our attention here. The website we have is Studios Biblicus. You can probably pretty well figure out. It means Bible studies. One of the characteristics that we've maintained on this website since the best we can remember, and Carl and I, and probably neither one have the greatest memory in the world, but the best we can remember started about 1995. So I think we're about 19 years into this. We have never published it with a church name. We have presented this page as it is, Bible studies. It has not been presented as the work of a church. This is not a local church website. This is a Bible studies website. And we've also tried to avoid an emphasis on people. All the articles on it are signed by their author, but we do not give background credentials on the authors. And when somebody writes an email saying, "What kind of theological background do you have?" I'll probably tell them something like, "Every Christian ought to study theology every day." But I'm not interested in seminaries or colleges or anything like that to establish credibility. The credibility of the material needs to be on the basis of the material itself. So there are frequent scripture references. We encourage people to open a Bible and to verify the things that are there. So it's Bible studies. We normally use the top part of the main page of the site to advertise local studies that will be done in different places. For example, when I did this screenshot a few days ago, we were getting ready, a young man in Curitiba was getting ready to do studies on the book of Mark. Those were done last Saturday. And starting today and going through next week, there are two North Americans who are in Portugal, and they're doing some studies over there. Mike Bozeman, who has lived in Brazil, and Kelly Cook from up in Indiana, they're in Portugal right now, so we put the ad for their studies on here. People can then click on that, and they can go to a sign-up page where we get contact information from them, and that way we're continuing to amplify the database of the contacts of people who are interested. So they will continue to receive notices about other things that are placed on the site. Below that, we have each day a focus video and a focus article. And they can click, of course, to go to the main, to see the whole article, or they can scroll down to read through that article. This is as much as anything to try to create a habit for people to come back to the page. Encourage them to make it their home page, because every day there will be something different that will show up on that. And even though Carl lives two time zones further west than I do, usually by the time I get up and get to the office in the morning, he's already got the new articles on there ready to go, so I can send out a message on Facebook and get that out for the day. He's an early riser and a diligent worker on that. I want to give a little bit of an idea of what kind of activity all this is bringing in. First of all, the video part. And these statistics come from YouTube, from where we have our studies. In that case, we weren't able to get Studios Biblicus. Somebody else was already using that. So we went to Studies of the Bible. That's why the slight difference here from our main site. These statistics are from the month of August, of just the videos. During the month of August, we had just over 30,000 views of videos, and that represented 183,000 minutes of people watching videos. I think that works out to the equivalent of basically four people watching around the clock day and night during the month. And as I say, that's part of what gets us in there. YouTube does this to try to encourage people to allow their videos to be connected to advertising. They've got some word for that, and that's why they put over here the total estimated earnings. So our total estimated earnings during the month of August were 0.00. We don't do those links because we don't want people taken to other things. We want them to study the Bible. And we don't want some other ad being run before or after their video, or links that are going to take them all over the place. So that's an idea with the videos for a month. This one is since we started 4 years ago with the videos, we've had a little over 1 million video views. And of some of our videos, we've got two videos that are now over 100,000 views of single video messages out of, I don't even know how many we've got now, but 80 or 90 maybe that are on there so far. And these are pretty simple videos. We're using a $140 video camera and some lights and an ordinary camera and somebody doing some of the editing work on that. It's not professional studio productions, but pretty straightforward messages about different things in the Bible. That's the video part of it. Before I go on to other things regarding the main website, questions about that?
Do you see more interest in watching a video rather than reading an article on your website?
In the Brazilian culture, definitely. The Brazilian schools are fairly weak. Reading comprehension tends not to be at the level it would be, for example, in the United States. And so, yes, the videos, I think, have been more effective on average than the articles have been. Obviously, when people are converted, we stress the emphasis of learning to read better, and reading the Bible and studying the Bible. But as far as initial context, I think the videos probably have been more effective. And I think that's the main reason. I don't know. I personally would rather read than watch a video. But that's not the way everybody looks at it, and certainly not the average thing in Brazil.
You need to offer both, but people have their preferences.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're trying to do. Isn't that what God did in the Bible? I don't have the brain that works very well with poetry, but part of it's written in poetry. Other parts of it are written in more of a didactic, organized approach. Paul rambled and John had his points organized. So I think we have to appeal to different kinds of ways of learning. And the videos, I think, help to reach a different segment than the articles do. Good question. Yes? When we started out, YouTube had a 10 or 15 minute limit, and so we stayed in that. We now have them kind of all over the place. We have some that are 3 or 4 minutes for just quick ones, which I think those have an advantage, but we also do in some cases put on full classes or full sermon presentations that'll be as long as maybe 40 minutes or so. So there's a mixture there. Obviously, the shorter ones, I think people are more likely to watch all the way to the end, but to be able to teach more thoroughly on some subjects, we do include some longer ones. And I don't know which works better overall. I think one will probably get more viewers, but the other one may teach more because it has more content.
Is the focus still on people outside of the church, or do members of the church actually take advantage of it?
A lot of Christians take advantage of it, but the focus is evangelistic. The focus is on reaching people on the outside. And so there's a lot of it that'll deal with moral issues, a lot that'll deal with doctrinal issues. With this, what I talked about with this migration from the Catholic Church into the different evangelical groups, we have to confront doctrinal questions. We have to deal with the gospel of prosperity. We have to deal with the necessity of repentance and baptism and different issues like that. And so we try to address those things in the articles and in the videos that are put out there. Yes?
It's hard to learn the language out of the English. Would it hard for you to learn the language?
It's not easy. Portuguese is not an easy language.
Okay.
I'm still learning it. I've been there for 21 years. I'm still learning it. Others? Okay, just real briefly, when I'm talking about these videos, I mentioned that these are fairly simple productions. I suspect that's an area that can still be utilized better in many other parts of the world, including in the United States. I think that if somebody wanted to really work on that concept and develop a use of simple videos that can be used for teaching online, as well as something you could put on a DVD and give to somebody, and we do that also. We distribute DVDs with the content of the site. We make it to where people can download the content of the site. What did you tell me, Carl? How many this year so far?
Well, in the last 12 months, 4,900.
Have downloaded the entire site.
Well, we have the updates on the site, the entire site, and then certain periodicals.
Okay. So one of the things we make available for people that have a slow internet connection, for example, they use a 3G modem out in the country, but they can go to someplace where they have fast broadband, and they can actually download all the content of the site, put it on a DVD or put it on their hard drive, and then they can continue to use that. They won't have the most recent additions, but they'll have most of what's been accumulated over nearly 20 years. And so he's indicating about 5,000 people have done that in the last 12 months, in addition to the DVDs we give out when we go to these studies. But what I'm saying about the videos, it's not an overly difficult thing to do as far as presenting it, preparing a video like that. I do think we have to be very careful in any presentation that we put out there for the public. We need to make sure we're teaching the truth and we're teaching it as carefully as possible. But it is something that's within reach in practical terms, I believe, of a lot of people. Okay, let's talk a little bit now about the main website. And these statistics, frankly, are quite encouraging to me. I think they're a lot of what motivates us to keep on trying to put material out there and keep on trying to service the contacts that come through this. You were warned about small type, so if you're sitting in the back and can't see this, you'll have to trust me on passing some numbers along here. This column shows the number of visits to the site during each of the first 8 months of 2014. It's not the number of unique visitors, that's a column over here, so some of these people have come back multiple times. It's also not the number of hits or page hits, which are larger numbers, but how many different visits were made to the site. Last month, the number got up to over 784,000. That was the number of visits to our site during the 31 days of August, an average of something like 27,000 per day. Carl, do you happen to remember how long it took us to get up to 1,000 visits? I don't either. I'm thinking several weeks, maybe months, back when we started. But back when we started this, and Carl's the one who conceived the idea, we were working with print publications. I hardly knew what the internet was. I didn't have a way to navigate the internet at the time he first suggested it. But by the fact that we've accumulated this material and continually put more stuff on there over all this time, we're talking now about thousands of articles, thousands and thousands of pages of articles, of studies that have been placed on there, hundreds of audios, dozens and dozens of videos. And so there's so much material there, it continues to draw people in. And I think that's part of what contributes to the kind of numbers that we're seeing. A lot of other sites link to ours. We do not do reciprocal links back. Because again, we don't want to take people away, even if we don't even do reciprocal sites, links to sites of other brethren, because all it takes is we start suggesting somebody go somewhere and that guy gets off on a tangent and starts with something that's not biblical, and we've already directed a bunch of people to that. So we try to keep people coming into this site for their studies. I think it's great when other brethren in Brazil start their own blogs and their own sites and congregations start their own websites. But we're trying to keep this one independent of those kinds of links. So that by itself is pretty encouraging to me, to see that kind of activity and realize that when we put an article on there, it has the potential of being read by tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people. A video that's put on there may be seen by 100,000 people over the period of several months. And so that's motivating to do the work that's necessary to keep it going. Yes?
The videos, is it someone up preaching? What exactly is the content?
Some of them are live video, or were recorded live of a Bible class or Bible study. A lot of them I've done just in front of a green screen at home, and that might be a 3-minute message or it might be a longer one, but it'll just be a single issue, a single question addressed on that. And then when we edit those, got a guy there in Brazil who does this part of it, he'll take all the scripture references, and sometimes if there's an outline, like a PowerPoint presentation, he'll take that. I guess I could probably get to one of these online here afterwards if we wanted to see that. But he'll have it to where the bigger part of the screen is the text, and the speaker is over on the side as a smaller image on that. That's essentially what we've done with that. Interview type things are difficult to do well, at least in my experience, and so we've stayed pretty much with just a direct one-on-one presentation. This material, the next two slides, sometimes people ask where the contacts are coming from. Where is it the people are accessing? And this is a difference between what we're doing and a local church page. I think that's an important thing to look at. I don't know how you would do a local church page that would get 750,000 visits in a month. Most cities don't have that many people in them. And if your focus is on a local environment, we're not talking about the same thing. The other thing that I mentioned from this, we do not have a church name on this. People don't see this as a church page. They see this as a Bible study page. We're trying to let them see what Jesus says. What Jesus says will lead them, if they continue to follow, will lead them to involvement with the church. But that's not where it starts. And so we want to draw them to what Jesus says, to what the scriptures teach. So this is from the last 24 hours, yeah. Let's see. That's from the next one I'll get to. But this was the last 24 hours and 12 minutes as of this morning. I got this one this morning. Showing the different countries, there were people accessed from 16 different countries during that 24-hour period. These are the people that accessed the main page of our site, because this counter only works for the main page. If we had the same counter on every single page through the site, how many years would it take to do that? If we had the same count on every single page on the site, it would give the bigger numbers for the whole thing. This is only for the main page. So if somebody comes in through a link to a video, they're bypassing the main page and it's not going to show up here. Yes?
Are the articles and the videos in Portuguese?
Oh, yeah.
All of them. Do you ever run into like translation issues where you have to translate a word or a specific
The Bible's in Portuguese.
So when you do the videos, you speak in Portuguese.
Yes, yeah.
Does Carl speak Portuguese?
Carl reads Portuguese with the help of Google Translate, right?
So when you say when you get up in the morning and you get to the office and he already has an article, he's written the article in Portuguese?
No. I'm not meaning he gets up and writes an article by 5 o'clock in the morning. Okay, what we do, in order to keep people coming back to the page, we've got these thousands of articles on there. But if we just leave that, every time they open the page, it's the same thing. So what he does is every day he pulls one of the articles that's already there and he puts it in a box on the main page and says, this is the focus article for today. It might be a new article, because we do put at least 2 new articles a week on there. Or it might be an older article that's being drawn out to the front again and saying, this is the focus. And he does the same thing with the videos. We don't put a new video on every day. But we recycle through the list of videos so that every time somebody opens the page, it's going to be a little different to try to build their interest. But yes, everything done in Portuguese. I teach and preach in Portuguese. I study the Bible in Portuguese. When I come to the States, I have to find my English Bible and dust it off and bring it up here to use to preach. And I write in Portuguese. We do use some material that's translated from others, from English to Portuguese. And in those cases, we get permission to translate it. And we have somebody translate it, somebody else verify it, check it. We go through a whole process to try to make sure that we're accurately translating what we've been using on that. So yeah, there is translating. There's been a lot of this material translated over the years. Early on, I wrote in English and had somebody translate because my written Portuguese was not up to the level that I could do it directly. But for the last 16, 17 years, I've been writing it directly in Portuguese. Okay, other questions to that point? I'm not even watching how we're doing on time here. I don't know if we're going fast or slow. But, okay, so this is kind of to get an idea of where they come from. But the next part, I think, will show that a little bit more. Well, maybe not. How does that look from out here? Okay, if you can kind of get an idea of red dots and white dots in there, they're not coming out very clearly on this slide. And I don't know if it'd be any better if we went straight to the internet, do you think? Okay, maybe we'll try that then. Let me. Does that work better?
Yes.
Okay. What the blinking shows is the last, how 500 minutes, Carl?
500 seconds.
500 seconds? Okay. The blinking lights are showing where people have accessed the site in the last 500 seconds. I don't know how they came up with 500 seconds, but that's, what, 8 minutes and 20 seconds? So, as you can tell, the most recent accesses have been from Brazil. Yeah, it's got to be seconds, not minutes, because Jared and I accessed it from Colorado a little while ago, and it's not blinking white anymore. So right now, there are people that have come on to the main page. This is just a sampling, because as I'm saying, this represents a pretty small percentage of the total activity on the site. But the people come onto the main page from these different parts of Brazil that are showing down there. And when something changes over here, right now they're all from Brazil. But if you look at what's happened over the last 3 weeks, I think is what we got here, from August 15th to today, you can tell all these places where there's red dots, people have accessed the main page of our website from all those different countries. So we've had them from Australia, from Asia, from various parts of Africa, several European countries, all over the United States and Canada, and all over Brazil, and especially over in Chile and part of Argentina, that we've had people accessing the site. Again, if you're thinking about a local church website to try to bring people to visit your Sunday services, that's probably not going to help you a whole lot. If that's the objective of a website, quite honestly, I think most brethren are going to end up being frustrated with that. And that's my experience, is that most brethren do get frustrated with their local church websites, because it's very hard to draw people in from such a narrow geographic area. The other thing is, maybe you can explain it to me better, Carl. These dots don't represent users. What? How did you tell me about that the other night?
These are the ones, they add them up over the period of time.
Okay. But are they? Do they represent users or servers, or what is it that each dot?
It's users, I think.
It is users? Okay. So there, would it be a bigger dot if it's more users, or just more dots on top of each other?
No, it's not that sophisticated.
Okay. Okay. So it's mainly just to get an idea of geographic distribution. Okay.
I put this on the site on August 15th. I had it on it about a year ago.
Right.
A longer period of time. But I was just, because I knew this particular series that you were going to be presenting, I thought I'd put it on there and see.
Thank you for doing that. I think that helps.
The graphical representation of how the website is being used across the world.
Yeah. And what that means is that through this website, there have been people converted in Belgium and Italy, and I'll tell you a little bit about a guy from Canada, because of this website that's being done out of Jeff City, Missouri, with material from Portuguese being sent up from São Paulo, Brazil. But how that's been able to reach people scattered all over the place. Okay, I'm trying to get back to what I have on the PowerPoint. Well, if our business is the Lord's business, then that sounds okay to me. See if this gets back to where we were. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to leave the website a little bit to go to the follow-up from the website. So let me pause again for questions. And as far as I'm concerned, the questions don't have to be in order. If after everything somebody else wants to come back to one of these other points, that's fine. But about what we've looked at with the general website information, anything that anybody wants to ask? The technical guy's right here, so I'll be happy to defer to him anything that's beyond my knowledge of the subject.
It's kind of like television. Most people don't need to know how it works, that it works.
Yeah.
The technical aspects.
That's the way I've looked at it for the last 19 years. I don't need to know how it works. I know it works and has worked very well. Yes?
Have you noticed certain topics are more popular on your video channels than others?
Yes, definitely, and on the articles as well. The search, some of the statistics that Carl's able to send me how to get to will show what search topics on Google take people to the site, and we'll see frequently at the top of the list the word tithing. I think because of so much emphasis on that in so many of the denominations. Satan, Lucifer. Even though we have practically nothing, I mean, Lucifer is not even Satan's name in the Bible, but people think it is, and so they'll go doing a search on that, and they'll look for that. So yeah, we can get an idea of what topics get them there initially. And that helps when we do the follow-up work, because sometimes I make the point to people that You might have gotten here because you were upset about tithing, but that's really not the major issue. I'm not really concerned about whether they give 10% or 15% or 2%. That's not the primary issue. There's something much bigger than that. God wants 100%. He wants the person. So it helps us to have an idea where we need to go when we work with the people directly. Randy?
What about when someone accesses your site and they have a question? How does that get answered?
We work through email contact for that. There are forms. There's several different forms scattered throughout the site. The people can fill out a form and get onto a list, for example, for updates. But we also put email contact on there so they can send a question to that. And when those go through, I have a person who kind of works triage, and we'll go through those and separate out. Carl initially sends some of them. Some of them go to him, and he sends them on to me. Some of them go straight to another email address. But we'll work through some triage with that. If it's somebody asking for contact in a local area, we'll try to put them in touch with brethren closer to where they are. If it's a Bible question, we'll try to put them in touch with somebody who will correspond with them. If we can tell where they're from, if they provide information that identifies where they're from, we usually try to put them in contact with somebody closer to them to build a more direct relationship. And I'll explain how that led to the conversion of a fellow that was in Canada in a little while. Over here and then back over here. Yeah, that's you.
Oh.
Yeah.
So when you showed all the red dots all over the world, I couldn't help but think all those people would have had to have been able to speak Portuguese to get anything out of the website. So how many of those red dots are people that got there and went, oh, it's in Portuguese. Oh, no. And they got to, you know, get off. Or is anybody modeling it? Or is anybody using yours as a guideline or a foundation and translating it? Are any of the other churches translating your lessons into English and having success with it? Or
I don't know if anybody's translating much of our stuff into English. A fair amount of what we have has been published in English already. And we've translated into Portuguese. So that material other brethren are using in other places. I don't know how many people would get to that and be surprised at the language, because most searches, like Google searches, are language specific.
So you type in Portuguese, you type in your question, and it directs you to your website.
Yeah, somebody would get on there and do a Google search about repentance. Or maybe repentance Jesus, a person types into Google. But they type that in Portuguese, and it's going to take them then to Portuguese sites. And ours will come near the top of the list, and that's another part. TV works, I don't know how exactly he does this, but somehow when Carl puts this stuff on there, he's able to get it to where it'll show up in these Google searches. And because of the quantity of material we have, if you search almost any Bible topic, it's likely that our site will show up in the first few listings.
That's
so that, yeah, that helps.
Really good, because usually I only go through the first page.
Most people do. That's why Google AdWords, which we also work with that some. If we're doing studies in a specific place, we'll work with Google AdWords. Anybody that searches a Bible topic in that region or that state, that they'll see the sponsored ad come up on the side. And that also takes them to our site. And it's the same thing. You want to get on that first page with Google, because a lot of people will not bother to go to page two. And however you do that, it works, because it gets on that first page a lot. Is there?
Google does it.
Google does it. Well, somebody had to get it set up to where it was working right with Google.
God does it. Yeah.
Well, God's behind all this. And that's right. And that's what I said at the beginning. That's where we need to get this ultimately. We learn to use the tools God has put in our hands. But we give him the glory for whatever good comes from that. Okay, over here.
Not having the website affiliated with any particular church, congregation, or person or anything, do you get many emails that are like, I thank you for your website, I stumbled upon it, and now I've been going to the Catholic Church, going through confirmation classes, and working on my baptism?
To some degree, that sort of thing can happen. I won't deny that there are cases where people see this as a reinforcement tool for their own faith, or they maybe end up searching out something and finding something that's different. In some cases, the more they study, if they keep studying our site, they then realize, but this is not really what I'm looking for, and sometimes they still come back around to where we are. One of the difficulties, and I'm trying to put this in a perspective, among brethren who share the same basic convictions that you have, any guess of how many full-time preachers there are in the United States? I don't have a clue. Brazil has the same land area, more than the 48 states. There are five of us. So that's where one of the problems that comes in with that is, it's not always possible to make direct personal contact with all of those people that come through. So we have to do the best we can to teach them online, teach them by email. We try to keep putting as much material as we can on so that as many answers as possible they can get right here, because the personal contact may be limited on that. But, and back again to God doing His part, I'll tell you a story in a few minutes about one case where it's remarkable to see the process that was followed for somebody to come to his decision to serve the Lord. But I'll get to that in just a little bit. Other questions there? Okay, the public studies that we do are basically a follow-up to the website. You've seen that we have a big geographic distribution of these contacts. And so I've only been doing this in Brazil. I have not been to Portugal. I've not been to the other countries that are involved there. There are some other men who have gone to Portugal and gone to Africa. There are some Portuguese-speaking countries in Africa. But I've limited my part in this aspect of it to the work in Brazil. Sometimes we recognize that there are a lot of people accessing the website from a certain place, or that we're mailing out material to a number of people in the same place. Well, that becomes an attractive place then to go and do public studies. And so we'll go into these cities, we'll arrange to rent maybe a community center or a conference room at a hotel or a classroom at a school, someplace neutral. We generally avoid doing these in church buildings because, again, as soon as a person arrives there, whatever image they have is going to affect the way they think about that. If they go to a community center or a school or a neutral location, it's still just a Bible study. And again, in that, we keep the emphasis. We're here to study the Bible. We've got people that come from various different religious groups. We're not asking you where you came from before we start the studies. Usually we'll get that information a little later on. Or they may have already given it to us online. But when I get to the study, I don't make a point of wanting to know who's Catholic and who's Baptist and who's Presbyterian. We're there to study the Bible. Everybody's welcome. We're going to open the Bible and study it. Yes?
Now, when some of those ask right up front, what church are you from, how do you handle that?
I tell them I'm a member of an independent congregation in São Paulo, that we serve Jesus and try to serve Him according to His will. I give them an explanation. I don't give them a label. Labels are too easy to pigeonhole and write it off if they've got an impression. For example, if I say Church of Christ in Brazil, most people will think, first of all, Pentecostal, because there are 240 congregations of the Pentecostal Church of Christ scattered through Brazil. Secondly, they'll probably think Christian Church if they're in the northern part of the country, because there are a lot of groups that we would call Christian Church here that refer to themselves as Church of Christ there. Thirdly, they will probably think of congregations that have some that do not use instrumental music but have some other practices that I don't agree with, and their social practices and their use of their resources. And they'll probably not think of us at all. So if I use that title, what I've already said to them is I'm something different than I am. What I am is a Christian. I'm a part of a congregation that serves the Lord, at least tries to. And so that's where I want to keep the focus on that. I think that's an important point, some of the stereotypes, because it's not going to be the same thing for each person.
I agree. So what are some?
Compared to that cult.
Okay, you're part of that cult. What else?
Legalism. You don't believe in music.
Legalism. You don't believe in music.
What else?
No dancing.
No dancing. What else?
Anyone going to
that?
That's the one.
What?
We're going to hear, you think you're the only one going to have
it. Oh, yeah.
Okay? So, you know, I've talked from time to time about this pigeonhole. Some people don't like the idea of not saying up front, this is the Church of Christ, or that I'm a member of the Church of Christ, or whatever. They want full disclosure and no secrets right up front. Well, it's not a matter of keeping secrets, it's a matter of getting the message out without necessarily identifying who's doing the carrying the message.
And I think it's important in that for us to realize Church of Christ is a biblical description. Nobody's arguing different on that. Church of God is a biblical description as well. Assembly of God would be a legitimate translation of a biblical description of the church. And a number of other ways we can describe who we are. Church of the Firstborn ones would be another way to look at that. And so there are different ways that we could describe that. But the point that I'm presenting here and that Jim's emphasizing as well is that once we put out a simple little label, we are now entering into the area of the stereotypes that the hearer has of what that represents. This is a communication issue. It's the same way that there are certain words we use in communication that have different significance for different people. And so we learn to choose our words carefully because we want to communicate an idea to somebody else. And in the context that I live, as I mentioned, the label Church of Christ will 95% of the time or more give an impression that is communicate something different than what I'm trying to communicate. All I want to say is a church that belongs to Jesus. That's all I'm trying to say. But what they hear is something entirely different. And if that's the case where you are, I think it's worthwhile to think about the way that you present that. The other thing that I think is helpful, if I say to somebody, I'm a member of a Church of Christ, that I've answered their question whether they understood or not, they think I've answered their question, they're satisfied, that's the end of the conversation many times. If I say I'm a part of a congregation that just tries to serve the Lord and we use the Bible as our only pattern, huh? How do you do that? I never heard of that. It leads to a follow-up question. And if it leads to a follow-up question, I'm engaging them in a follow-up conversation. And we can get somewhere with that. We have a better chance to help lead them to that. We know that Paul used the description churches of Christ in the book of Romans. How many times in Paul's journeys do we see him meeting somebody and describing himself as, I'm a member of a church of Christ? Or church of God, or whatever other description. That wasn't the way he approached that. The church wasn't even the primary focus, the initial focus. It never is the primary focus, and it certainly isn't the initial focus. What is the initial focus? Jesus. And if we want to know about Jesus, we're going to have to look at the revelation that Jesus left us. And that's going to get us to the scriptures, and get us to what the Bible says about Jesus. If we learn that, we'll learn that he established a church, and that he expects us to be a part of a local church, and all those things are going to come. But it's not the opening statement. It's not the beginning point. And that's what we have been working with in Brazil, the way we've approached that there. Richard. Probably a less used term.
Well, it's not used hardly at all, and most people have never heard of the Lord's Church. The Lord's Church.
Interesting.
And so I'll get a follow-up question almost every time. But if I said I'm a member of the Church of Christ, that the stereotype will be there, even though I understand biblically that it is a correct term and I'm using it properly, but they don't understand that because of their preconceptions that they've had over the years and their teaching and everything.
Right.
But I said, I'm a Christian. I'm part of the Lord's church. I just like to engage in a Bible study. I'd like to know if you'd be interested. And that leads to at least other questions.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't turn them off right there.
Good.
Just like a Mormon walked up to your door, as soon as you can tell, but as soon as they say, well, I'm Mormon, well, everyone has stereotypes. We know exactly where they're coming from, what they're talking about. Somebody that's a Baptist, and you walk up, and I'm from the Church of Christ, they already are schooled on what the people in Church of Christ believe in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
They know that you're a Pharisee. You're a legalist. You're whatever. You don't believe in faith only. There's so many things that go through their mind that they won't be able to time of day.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when they pretend that they're on the cell phone.
And what we're looking for is to get the time of day. We're looking for to get the opportunity to sit down with
them. To be able to talk about to them.
Yeah. A few years ago, back in 1998, two other brethren and I made a trip to a city in northeastern Brazil because at that point we still weren't seeing a lot of returns on the internet, but in the material we were mailing out, we realized we were sending material to 400 people in this one city of a little over 100,000 people. Now that's pretty good concentration of contact. So we sent letters to these people. We said, we're going to be in town certain days. We'd love to study the Bible with you. We got there and we got a map, went to the city hall, got a map, and we started going around and visiting as many of these people as we could, inviting them to come to studies. And going into town, we didn't know anybody. We had as many as 70 people come to Bible studies in the hotel conference room that we had rented there. And one fella came the first night we were in town, before we started the studies the second night. He got there to our hotel the first night. He had communicated with me a fair amount already. And he came in and he said, I want to take advantage of the time you guys are here. I've got some questions about some things. He said, I have studied everything you've got on your website or all the publications you sent out. I don't remember if he'd done it through the website yet. But he said, I've studied through everything you've given me. And he said, I disagree with you on some things. And he handed me three sheets, front and back, of notebook paper where he had written out a topic. He said, what you say is, and he'd cited the sources of different things from different things we had published, and then he would make his arguments against that. And he handed me these papers. He said, these are the things I want to talk about. So over the period of the next few days that we were there, I spent most of my time with him and with other people that he brought while the other two men were going out visiting others. And we studied through his list of questions. Result of that was, the last day we were there, we baptized him and 11 other people that he had brought as contacts. Most of them had left a Baptist church. And so, not very long afterwards, he got a visit from a woman that had been a friend of his for a long time in the Baptist church, saying, I can't believe this, because by this time, the Baptist pastor had been publicly denouncing us and them. Pastors in that town had been on the radio, publicly denouncing us as some cult who had come into town. And so this woman was all stirred up, and she goes to this guy's house, and she says, you know, I don't believe this, that you would turn away like that, and that you'd buy into some new doctrine and all that. And he said, would you just sit down and let me show you some things from the Bible? And she agreed to that. Her name was Lenny. Lenny is one of the strongest members of that congregation now, because she had the opportunity to look at what he was saying, to try to get rid of some of these preconceived ideas that were there, and to look at that. Unfortunately, that man who was the pivot point to reaching so many other people has been withdrawn from because he has gone back to sin. But many others continue to be faithful, and he was the contact point to get to them 15 years ago. So I think it's all about trying to get people to actually listen. And a label very, very rarely will accomplish that. The Lord's Church approach. Well, let's imagine that a whole bunch of people start to adopt that same approach, and it gets to the point that it's what we're putting on signs and what everybody's hearing. Then you may go back to saying, I'm from the Church of Christ. Because it's the image in their mind. It's not that either of these descriptions, that there's anything wrong with the description.
It's a stigma that's attached to in their minds.
In their minds, exactly.
Not scripturally, but
yeah. And so what was maybe an ideal description 100 years ago may not be the ideal description as we teach people today. And we're not denying facts, we're not hiding anything, we're simply trying to present the truth so people understand it and will listen to it. Okay, is that enough of a detour on that point? As far as what we do on these public studies, neutral locations, study marathons. This has become a favorite tactic of mine, technique, and I guess you say. And the biggest reason is it's economical. I can get to a city on a Friday, I can teach for 6 or 7 hours straight on Sunday or on Saturday. And if there's a church in that town, I can meet with them on Sunday. If there's not, I can get a plane during the night, Saturday night, and be somewhere that there is a congregation and worship with them on Sunday. And that means we pay one day's rent on a conference hall. We do our advertising to get people to come one time. And that also helps people that come from other cities in a region. We've actually had people sometimes book a flight to come from another state to come to study because they know they can get in there on Saturday, participate all day, and fly back Saturday night maybe, that they can keep their costs down with that. So it enables us to accomplish a great deal. The other thing about that is if you can engage people for 6 hours in one day, you can go a long way in what you're teaching them. You can put a lot of material into that. In 2011, I think we did this in about 19 different states. I did a series of 10 questions where I went with some of the most direct, hard-hitting topics that were coming up in questions all over the place from denominationalists. We dealt with everything from premillennialism to divorce and remarriage to the plan of salvation to the use of church money, all this in one day. 6.5 hours of hard-hitting, fast-paced study. But that was one of the things that led to a number of conversions and some new congregations that were started during that time. So it becomes a way of trying to confront people. Obviously, we open up for, these are open forum kinds of things, questions and answers after the different studies, the different classes of that. That's a challenge when you don't know where the people are coming from, because you've got a Catholic on one hand who would defend sprinkling of infants, and on the other side you've got a Baptist who insists that it has to be immersion, but not for the remission of sins, and you don't know who's who when they start putting out these questions. So you have to answer the question carefully but biblically, and try not to distort it for one side or the other. We announce these things on the website. We hand out flyers. I don't know how many millions of flyers have been handed out in Brazil in work of this type, but we are talking millions. We're talking one little church up in Manaus has about 15, 20 people. In 2011, I think that congregation single-handedly handed out more than 100,000 flyers in different cities in the region. Some of them made trips to other cities to help with these things and handed out flyers. And as I mentioned, topics that are chosen to challenge, to confront. Okay, let me talk a little bit about people, because isn't that what the message of the gospel is intended for? Bottom line is, we want to see faces. We want to see, and the faces are kind of dark here, I think. Kind of not a very good reproduction of photos, but they represent people in these pictures. And just a few examples to kind of illustrate an idea. Renata lives in a city about 5 hours from where I live, where we did not know of any Christians in that city when she got in contact with us. But there were other Christians in cities not too far away, an hour and a half, 2 hours, 2.5 hours away. So I sent her contact along to two couples in two other cities and asked them to try to help her, and they did. They were very diligent about that, got in touch with her, studied with her, invited her to come to their homes. They went up to the city where she was, and she brought a friend, Thais, and it wasn't very far into their studies because she had already studied quite a bit. After 20 years, now I don't remember exactly all the time frame she told me when I talked to her, but how many years she was in the Catholic Church, how many years she was in just in the world, but Renata and Thais obeyed the gospel. Then these two women started saying, could you do studies in our town, our city? It's not a little town, it's a pretty good sized city. Could you do studies here? And so, again, with the help of these others from other neighboring cities, they rented a community center, an auditorium about the size of this one, maybe a little bit larger. They handed out flyers, they put ads in the newspaper, they made banners to put up of where the studies were going to be. We put it on our website. And we got up there, brethren from about six other cities went to help out and to encourage. That auditorium was almost filled that Saturday when we did these studies all day. And during the studies, several different people came during the intervals to come and talk about things, including a Baptist seminary student and another guy who's a leader in a Baptist church, saying, we never heard baptism presented that way. We're going to have to study this more. And left there, almost literally scratching their heads with this, perplexed by what it was, but indicating that if they were truly convinced that that was the truth, that they would make the changes that were necessary. This was very recent. I'm still waiting to see what becomes of that. This is the kind of experience we have repeated over and over in different parts of the country. Yes?
So you said you publish a certain number of questions. Are they related with time frames that people show up for a particular topic, or do they typically come and stay for the whole 6 hours?
Most of the time they come and stay for the whole 6 hours. These studies in Franca that I'm referring to, I don't think anybody left until it was all over. And almost all of them were there when we started the first class. So we sometimes do publish an idea of a time frame for that, but most of the time people will come and spend the whole day. And I'm amazed at the attention. People stay attentive. We do take brief breaks to let people go to the restroom, get a cup of coffee or a little bit of water. Usually some of the local people will bring in a coffee pot and maybe some crackers or something. And we'll usually have a 30 to 60 minute break in the middle that they can go out somewhere and get a bite to eat and come back in. But for the most part, it's just direct study. And people will stay awake for it. People stay involved. Yes?
How do you prevent baptism in such a way that it would convince Baptists that? That would be interesting.
Well, this, we teach the same thing, Patricia, that you teach here, that anybody will teach on that. We'll use the same scriptures, the same arguments. It's just in some cases, we're finding people who are honest enough to examine that. And many times what we face are barriers because people don't want to examine it. But the teaching is no different, except for the language. It's done in Portuguese instead of English, but it's the same teaching.
All right.
Okay?
I find it didn't work then. Okay. I thought you said had a way.
Now, I don't have any special ways of teaching it. It's the same message that anybody else is going to teach. Wagner came because his wife came. She was a contact through the website, Francielli, who's not in this picture. Then Wagner came, and then his mother, 78 years old, he baptized last year. She's now worshiping with us there in São Paulo. But the story I want to focus a little bit more is this guy, can hardly see him there, Pedro. I want to tell you how Pedro came to obey the gospel. I mentioned that when we get these emails, we try to identify where people are from and send the contact to somebody close to them. But you know how on your cell phone, if you type in a phone number, that it'll automatically put parentheses around the area code? Well, different countries have different systems of area codes. Brazil has two-digit area codes. So on my phone in Brazil, it'll put parentheses around the first two digits, and then we have eight-digit phone numbers. So the same number of digits, it's 10 digits, but the parentheses come in a different place. So I've gotten to where I don't pay much attention to the parentheses around the area code, because if somebody's writing this with a phone that's not configured right, or whatever, it may come out a little different. So when I got the email from Pedro, it started out with 5-1, and then there were eight digits after that. 5-1 is the area code for a part of Rio Grande do Sul, down in the very southern part of Brazil. And there's some capable men down there, capable brethren there, so I sent the contact along to some of them. Tiago, one of those brethren, got into communicating by email with Pedro, answering lots of questions, helping him sort out the doubts that he had. Pedro had been studying by this time for about 3 or 4 months, a material on our website. So he and Tiago started exchanging emails, got to the point that Pedro was asking all the right questions and showing his interest in obeying the gospel. And Tiago said, okay, now where exactly do you live? He said, I'm in Canada. That's a little ways away from southern Brazil. So, Tiago, not willing to give up, and this is where I said, we see the Lord acting, the Lord working in this. Tiago said, well, we've got some intensive Bible studies that we're planning to do in April, and it was getting close to this date. Gary Fisher was going to be down there, and Gary was going to be doing some studies with the congregation there. So, Pedro bought an airline ticket, round-trip ticket, so he could fly down, participate in these studies, with the intention that he would obey the gospel while I was there. Then he'd go back to Canada to finish his English course he was doing, because he actually lived in this part of Brazil. So he'd gone from there up to Canada to do this course, and now he comes down to southern Brazil and obeys the gospel with the intention to go back and finish his course and then go back to his job where he lived in central Brazil. Except after he'd spent some time with brethren down there, he realized that he needed what they had more than he needed the English course. So he abandoned the English course, did not go back to Canada, stayed there with those brethren, gave up his good-paying government job where he had lived before, started looking for a job, and even was accepting whatever he could get to try to make ends meet, living off of savings, so he could be working with those Christians and learning more. 4 days before we left, 5 days before we left to fly up here for this trip, Pedro moved from Porto Alegre to São Paulo and is currently living in our house with us. So he's going to spend some more time with us and continue to try to develop as he looks for a job now in the São Paulo area. He didn't find a job where he was, and so now he's going to look for one where we are and spend some time there. So you remember that story in Acts 8 about the guy that was traveling and God sent another man to go and talk to him? Those things happen. And they continue to happen. Not that God is speaking directly into somebody's ear. You go and teach in such and such a place. That's not the way he's operating today. He's already given us the order. He's already told us to go teach. But there are people seeking. And there are people seeking sometimes in places, remote places. Another couple came from, they're Brazilians who live in Italy. They came to some of the studies we did about a year ago in the interior of São Paulo. Learned quite a bit in one day. Had already been studying a lot of our material before that. Went back to Italy got in touch with me again, asked, can you get us in touch with somebody over here who can baptize us? So I was able to make contact with brethren. I knew to get in touch with brethren over there, and they went and studied further with the brethren there and obeyed the gospel. The gospel does its job. Whether it's in Brazil, in the United States, in Italy, in Canada, the gospel works. Yes?
So with a lot of these people coming from other places and meeting for these marathon studies, and then they go back to their remote places, how often are they able to meet with other brethren or eventually have a conversation with them?
Very well described. All these baby Christians going back. And that has been a big challenge. When they are Christians, when they obey the gospel and then they go back, we try hard to give them support to get to where they are, and help in finding other people. That if it's one person who goes back, we want to try to do studies there and see if we can find other people so that we can at least get two people together and begin a congregation with those two people. Another example of that was just a few years ago. I was doing studies in Salvador, which is along about here. A man rode bus all night to come from the neighboring state, Sergipe, got there for the study marathon that was starting at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning, 9 or 10 o'clock Saturday morning. He got there earlier than that, was waiting when we got there to start. And he came, as they'd say in some parts of the country, loaded for bear. He came wanting to challenge me on things that I had been teaching on the website. And so he got there, and he had this idea in his head. You know, this guy's coming here to do these lectures. You know, he's going to be treated as some big pastor or something and all that. So he came into the room where we were doing the studies, and first fellow he met, he said, I'm looking for Dennis. Where is he? That he's over there unstacking chairs. Just different image than he had right from the beginning. But he participated in the studies. At lunchtime, I invited him to go out and have a sandwich with us. And so he did. So as we were walking to and from the lunch counter for that, he was asking questions, and I was opening my Bible and showing things. During lunch, the whole time. He participated all afternoon in the studies. Everybody else was leaving, and I asked him what time his bus was to go back home. He was going to get a bus that night and go back home. From what he told me, he had about 3 or 4 hours still. I said, I don't have any plans for the next 3 or 4 hours. You've asked some good questions today. Can we study some more? He jumped at the opportunity, so we sat down and studied. And in that particular study, I had not come around to a direct confrontation about his salvation in the public studies. But in the private study, I did. And Jeanne, at that point, literally asked me, is there water at this hotel? And we went up to the pool on the roof that evening, and he was baptized. So we then went out to supper together, spent the rest of the evening with him, talked further, studied further. He got on a bus and went back home, got home early the next morning, to tell his wife that he'd gone down there to confront me and had ended up obeying the gospel. A month later, I was in the city where he lives and was able to study with his wife, and she obeyed the gospel. Later on, his mother obeyed the gospel, although she's now in a different state, worshiping with other brethren in a different place. We then started doing public studies in this city, and after 4 or 5 different times of doing public studies and different people coming, we kind of met the right contact with the right people, and at about 12:30 one Sunday night, in about 20 kilometers away from that town, I baptized 14 people, started another congregation in that area. Those are the kinds of things that can happen when people will share what they're learning, and that's what Jeanne did. So Jeanne, for me, was kind of the key person to open the door for. And now there are now 3 congregations in that little state, the smallest state in the country. There are now 3 congregations up there. Yes?
How come the gospel don't catch on here like that?
I think the gospel does catch on here like that for some people. Okay. And you've got to remember that we're talking about a few hundred people in a country of millions. There are thousands of Christians in this country, and there are people that are obeying the gospel. But we have to find those people, and we have to get out there to look for them. So, anyway, those are some of the people. Yes?
Answer these questions when they're asked, and we're just coming to the appointed place, the appointed time, Wednesday evening for a topic study, and then 2 services on Sunday. this is not going to be the fruits of that. We have to put that sort of effort in and have a desire to spread the gospel, not just stay in our own little world and make it to the appointed assembly. But that, this is all, listening to this, it just, it's so, I can't even imagine what it would have been like to baptize 14 people.
Well, it's one of the things that the Lord does give us those opportunities when we're out there seeking them. And I agree with you. We have to prepare. And it's not that it's always going to happen the same way or that we're all going to have the same experiences. You know, that's the only time in my life that I've been involved in 14 baptisms in one night. But there are people out there that are seeking and that are wanting to learn. And we have to try to reach them. Did you raise your hand there, sir?
Yeah, we also have to realize when an opportunity presents itself and then be ready just with the basics. Somebody asks a basic question, don't give them more than a basic answer, because a basic answer will lead to the next question. And you don't have to give them the whole gospel to grab their attention. But the main thing is realizing that a friend or a neighbor, somebody that you met at a restaurant or whatever, might ask a question. You've got to realize that opportunity came, and were you prepared, and did you take that opportunity?
I agree. We need to answer what they're asking and help lead them on to the next step of that. Okay, a little bit more just about people. I mentioned that we work with these different groups of studies in different parts of the country, get around different places, and these are some examples of those kinds of studies. This is actually from the congregation where we meet there in São Paulo. That's why they have actual pews. One of the only congregations, I think, in the country that actually has pews, but we do, where we worship. Another thing we've started doing in the congregation there in São Paulo, where I am, there's several congregations in São Paulo now, but the one where I'm a member, is we've started on the Carnival holiday, which is Mardi Gras in this country. It's a big thing in parts of Brazil, and it's the worst holiday of the year as far as I'm concerned. But it's become an opportunity because it is always an extended weekend. The people are off work basically Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. That gives enough time that we can pull people together for some intensive studies. So we started this 2 years ago. We're getting ready for a third one now in 2015, where we start at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning and we go until Tuesday evening. And those other marathons I was talking about where we do 6 hours in a day, those are the mini marathons. That's what we do for the people that are not yet Christians. When Christians get together to study, we study. So we pack about 30 hours of studies into a four-day period. The first year we did it, we had about 100 people participate. This is coming in from several different places. Second year, we had about 150. About half of those came from outside. I mentioned the congregation is about 80 or so. Not all of the congregation was there. Some people had traveled. But we had about 70 or 75 people come in from outside the area. Christians opened their homes, and we were able to put all of them into homes, or some of them slept in classrooms at the church building. Some of the single guys did, but we packed everybody in there. Nobody had to pay for a hotel, and we were able to get everybody together for 4 days of intensive studies. And Lord willing, we'll do that again now in February. It turns out to be one of the most encouraging, most edifying weekends, periods that we're able to have. And for some of these people that are worshiping in congregations where they have 3, 4, 5, 10 people, and all of a sudden they can spend 4 days in the midst of 150 who have come from all over the country. And this year we even had a family and one woman who came over from Chile. I've made a couple trips over into Chile and Argentina to teach and have met brethren there. So we had an elder and his family come from Chile and participate. Some of these people had never shook hands with an elder before. Because none of the churches in Brazil right now that we work with have them. So this becomes one more very encouraging opportunity. That's basically what I have to say. I will open up for further questions, but more than anything, please keep praying, because this is God's work. And it's God who is acting. He's acting through those of us who are on the ground. He's acting through others who are here praying and supporting and encouraging in other ways. Please keep praying. We don't know how many others God is preparing to accept the gospel in Brazil. Yes?
I got a couple questions. One relates to kind of recently a fellow that was here for the summer went to South Africa. My brother-in-law's from South Africa, and one of our elders is going to South Africa. So we've heard a little bit about what's going on there, and there appears to be more of a security issue there. Do you run into that in Brazil? And then also, hearing from the work in South Africa, they have some unique challenges or difficulties with different things that have not even come up really in America, just different doctrines or different practices. What might be those challenges in Brazil that we don't even think about here?
I'll reverse the order of your questions and my answer. As far as different doctrines and practices, there are some things that are emphasized more in Brazil than they are here. The Pentecostal movement is stronger in Brazil than it is here. So we deal a lot more with the Holy Spirit gifts questions there. You deal with them here, but we deal with that a lot more there. Spiritism is, Brazil has the highest concentration of Spiritists of any country in the world. And this is that's a broad category. Spiritism includes some of the tribal practices brought over from Africa of believing the incantations and such, something sort of like the voodoo practices in the Caribbean. It also includes doctrines, teachings like French, 19th century French writer named Alan Kardec, who basically took Darwin's theory of evolution and tried to apply it in the spiritual realm and suggested that we are all evolving to higher spiritual levels and that Jesus had just evolved more than we have and that his miracles were because he was more evolved and that we can evolve in the same way. That's something that hardly anybody in the States has ever heard of Alan Kardec. I have neighbors who are Kardecistas, followers of Kardec, and it's a very, very common thing down there. So yes, there are some kinds of challenges as far as teachings and doctrines that are different. The safety issue, Brazil is less violent now than it was 21 years ago. I won't say that we've been immune to that. We've never been in a situation of persecution because of our faith putting us in any kind of jeopardy. We have been in situations, just the fact of living in or visiting violent areas. When I moved my family from a small town outside of São Paulo into São Paulo in January of 1996, the first night, five people were murdered less than 2 miles from that house where we lived. And in the first, remember Benito, was it first, I get the numbers back, first 10 days there were 11 murders within a 2 mile radius of the house we'd moved into. During the time we lived in that neighborhood, 5.5 years, I saw people that were dead, murdered in front of the property where I was living in the street, 150 feet down the street, 300 feet down the street. There were at least three murders within about 300 feet of our house during that time. We were not affected. These were usually drug issues, somebody killing somebody that didn't pay his debts or whatever. They weren't things that involved us. Violence in Brazil, in some parts of the country, has reduced to rates that are considered internationally normal. Basically, the UN says that if a city has fewer than 10 murders for every 100,000 residents in a year, that's considered first world kind of behaviors. New York City has gotten down to about 4 or 5 per 100,000. São Paulo is down to 11. Statistics when we first moved there had it more like 46. So it's down considerably. There is one city that we visit, and we've taught, though, in northeastern Brazil, that has a murder rate of 111 per 100,000. It is amongst the worst in the world. And so I'm not going to say there's no risks there. But let's put that in perspective. Mountain climbers who choose by sport to climb mountains, the annual death rate is about 45 per 100,000. So you're 4 times more likely to die climbing mountains than living in the city that I live in. So I think I'll stay there. I think that's an acceptable level of risk. And I'm not doing it just for the fun of climbing a mountain. There's other reasons to be there. So perspective helps us sometimes. Other questions?
Do they have a welfare system here, or Social Security like we do here?
Yeah, something like you have here. They do have a welfare system and Social Security. Works probably about like the one here works.
I didn't know if I could get on if I moved to Brazil.
Well, you'd have a problem if you moved to Brazil because you're not a citizen of Brazil. I don't receive those benefits there because I'm not a citizen there. So that would not apply to a foreigner who moves there.
Would I be able to get a job there, do you think?
That depends. You'd have to get permission to even move there to get a job. It's not an easy process. Okay. You're probably better off staying in the country you were born in for that. Others?
You were just talking about how there's not really elders there. Mm-hmm. Are most of the congregations that you work with or around there, are they congregations that have been here for the last 20, 30 years? Or
no. Of about 30 congregations that we work with, one of them has existed for 23 years. All of the others have been started more recently than that, and probably about half of them in the last 5 or 6 years. So we are dealing almost entirely with first-generation Christians, with young congregations. The church where we are did have elders for a while. We don't now. Situation of family problem for one, move for another, and that ended up dissolving the eldership. But it's the only congregation that we work with that has gotten to that point so far, and it wasn't, for about 7 years we had elders, but we don't anymore.
So do you see that continual growth with these new Christians, that there's some places that they might be getting close to having elders or even preachers that are able to start taking over? And
I think there's progress in both of those areas, in developing men who will be elders and in developing for more preachers. I think that, especially that work with preachers, will end up being a fair amount of my focus in my last years, because I imagine I'll get to a point that I don't travel as easily as I do now. But I think that maybe I could still work with training younger men, having men come and live with us for a while and work in a training kind of a situation to get help with some others. And I think other men will do the same sort of thing. And growing in a local congregation where you have to take on a share of responsibility also helps to develop men for those kinds of things. So I think we're progressing toward that, but it's a slow progress, a slow process to get to that. Yes, sir?
In general, what are the Bible study habits of Christians in Brazil?
Varied. I think probably much like you see variations in Christians in the States. Some who, as she commented, maybe just show up for services on Sunday and Wednesday, and that's about all they get. Others who are very diligent, who study a lot. And those are the ones that we see rapid growth, that after a year of conversion, sometimes has a better grasp of a lot of things in the Scriptures than people who have been there for 15 years. So it's not much different than here. We have to constantly motivate brethren to dig in. I think Brazilians are generally less reliant on commentaries and other outside sources than they are in actually reading the Bible and trying to study that. We emphasize textual study in most of our Bible classes. We do some topical studies, but a lot of that's more for preaching. Our Bible classes are mostly textual. Where we worship, for example, we try to study through the Bible every 5 years. Now, some of those studies are going to be more overviews and others are more in-depth. But we try to keep going, cycling through the Bible about every 5 years so that we keep people constantly looking at the whole Bible.
What kind of translation is used in Portuguese?
There are several different ones available. I'm using one that is probably roughly equivalent to the New King James Version as far as its level of literalness in translation. But there are a number of others, from very loose paraphrases to older archaic language editions. Yes?
You had mentioned that there were, I think you said, 5 full-time preachers in all of Brazil. I guess 2 questions.
I'm talking about among the brethren who share our basic convictions, yes.
So are those other ones all native Brazilians, or are there other North American people who moved there? And then the second part of the question, I guess, is I'd imagine you probably interact with people who are working in some of the surrounding countries in South America.
Good questions. The preachers I'm referring to in Brazil are 2 North Americans and 3 Brazilians. There's one other North American, Carl Ballard, who married a Brazilian, is down there. He's the other North American. And then there are 3 Brazilian men in fact, all of them came out from the congregation where I am now. The brethren there saw these men growing and offered to support them so they could devote their time to that. And so they received much of their support from that congregation and some from other congregations in Brazil. As far as other countries, in the last 3 or 4 years, I've had a little bit more contact across the borders in Chile and Argentina. I've been to Chile 3 times, to Argentina twice. So I don't have a good global view of those situations. I have spent quite a bit of time talking with elders of a congregation in Santiago, Chile, and they've helped me to get a little better picture of the overall situation in Chile. There are, proportional to the population, there are more congregations in Chile than there are in Brazil. Not more total, but proportional to population. Chile only has about 17 million people in the entire country. And from what they were able to tell me, there are 20-some congregations scattered through it. It's a very long, if you look on the map, goes from the desert in the north to the icebergs in the south, a very long, skinny country. As far as the situation of the congregations, work in Chile began back in the 1960s and has continued throughout. So they're dealing with something like 50 years now of experience. We've been in Brazil for 21 years. So that's one of the differences that's there. Work in Chile has also been much more dependent on U.S. resources, financial resources. A number of the preachers in Chile are supported by U.S. churches, which according to the Chilean brethren, they see problems with that. Problems, for example, of a man who is in a small town, a small church, has some conflict, so he decides that he'll start another congregation in the same small town and reports about how his evangelistic efforts, but all of his resources come from people that don't even know anything about it. And so he's doing very little, drawing support from congregations in the States. I'm not saying that's the rule. I'm saying there are cases like that they have reported. And again, I think it's an argument for nationals being supported by national churches, people that know them and can communicate with them. I personally think that has a better long-term result. Yes?
Here in the U.S., it varies from state to state, but it seems like the further north you get, the less people want to go to church or attend a church. What's the general culture there in Brazil? Is it a church-growing country or not?
In general, I think growth is faster in Brazil. I think there is more potential right now for growth. I think as the country becomes more prosperous, that opportunity is going to decline, because the more people think they don't need God, the less likely they are to seek Him. And money is often what causes them to think that. It's interesting, you mentioned about even in the States, there's these preconceived notions that we have that Northerners are colder and Southerners are more hospitable. How's that for Minnesota? the preconceived idea. I really think there's some reasons for those stereotypes. Climate is one of them. Especially before air conditioning and all that entered. If you live in a cold climate, you're going to be inside your house more. If you live in a hot climate, you are not going to be inside your house more. And so you're going to have a different kind of interaction with your neighbors. I've lived in the north in the United States, and you get inside the house and you're treated wonderfully. There may not be as many people out on the street as there will be in a warmer climate in the south. Brazil, it's the same thing, except it's flipped in the hemisphere. So the northern climate up is the northern part of the country is where it's hotter. And those are the people that are all out in the street and that everything's done openly. In the south, people are viewed as being colder because it's the colder climate and they're inside more. The other thing about climates is that the new world has mirrored the old world in a sense. When Germans come to North America, they seek regions that are climatically similar to where they were. When somebody comes from the Mediterranean, they're going to seek a climate. Or if they come from Africa, they're going to seek a climate that's more like where they came from. Same thing in Brazil. So the southern part of the country has more Europeans. The northern part of the country has more Africans. And again, it's the difference in climate seems to be mirrored from where they came from. So all those different factors enter into that. It goes back to cultures that probably go back hundreds of years and not just where we are right now. But more interaction, face-to-face interaction with people, perhaps in the hotter climates. That's going to be a natural thing. People in the colder climates may be more likely to stay inside and study, and sometimes may develop more deeply in their study, and sometimes turn out to be excellent contacts for that reason. So, we got to go preach the gospel wherever we can and see who responds to it. I like Northerners, by the way. I married one. Married a Wisconsin girl. So, okay. Anything else there? I know some of you have other commitments, so I won't try to prolong this any. Be happy to talk with anybody that might have any further questions. And Carl's the technical guy, so anything related to the website, the technical aspects of it, he knows a lot more about it than I do. Thank you very much for your time and attention.